The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jenny. I'm an alcoholic. Well, that's it. Further away.
Hi.
Better? Is that better? Can you guys hear me? Yeah. Okay. That's loud. Okay. All right. So Jenny alcoholic. Just as far as like my stats go, I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. I've been sober since I was 17, which was May 26th of 97. I've worked the steps, and I'm nervous because this is my home group, and I feel like always when I speak at my home group, like my heart is on a platter, you know what I mean? And this is my last time here. I'm moving to Florida next week, so I'm really glad that I could speak here before I go. So I'm just going to share with you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and kind of how I've gone through that. I'm originally from Minnesota. My family wasn't too, you know, I came into AA, and I was like, okay, my family's not alcoholic, I didn't get abused, so I shouldn't be an alcoholic, right? So I grew up in a family, and we were all just, like, emotionally shut off. If everything looked all right from the outside, it was totally fine, and I got left alone, which was pretty big for me, like, as I got into my using pretty heavily. You know, my first drinks were when I was probably like third or fourth grade. My dad used to travel a lot, and his buddies would come into town from overseas and bring chocolates with liqueur in them and put them on top of the refrigerator, and I wasn't supposed to eat them. But after a while, they said, okay, well, I love chocolate even today, and they said, okay, well, you can have it as long as you break it open and pour the alcohol down the sink, which I didn't do. So I would just eat the chocolate and the alcohol together. I'm just going to kind of tell you some of the stuff that happened for me, because I don't know if it's important or not, but I definitely had that I felt like I didn't get the manual to life feeling when I first came to AA, and when somebody said it, I related. You know, growing up, I always had like one best friend, and that was it, and I felt like I was on the outside with the rest of my peers. I had, you know, first grade, some girl punched me in the face. You know, in third grade, I didn't go to the last day of school because I thought they teased me too much. It, like, there was stuff that happened where I felt like an outsider for a long time. So, get to middle school, and 12, you know, the summer before eighth grade, I, like, met my two friends who, we were like the three musketeers from there on out. I don't remember how we met. I think it was towards the end of the school year. But one of them had an older sister, and we started that summer smoking cigarettes, getting drunk, and smoking pot. And the first, you know, it was, we would all go over to my friend's house because her mom was single, and she would just let us hang out there. And she had a stash of weed at her house, too, so we would go raid it once in a while. And we would just hang out and drink schnapps and go to the beach and smoke pot. And it was totally fun. And I don't even think I got drunk for the first time that summer. Like, the first time that I got completely smashed my friend's older sister brought us out into the woods with her friends. And, it, you know, in Minnesota, that's what we do, is like you go into the woods if you're young and you get drunk. And I had that feeling when I first started drinking alcohol, like I could say anything. And I didn't really care what you thought, you know. I grew up with two older brothers, so I always had this thing where, like, I was the whiny little sister, or, like, I couldn't really say what I wanted to say because I felt like there was just something that, it just wasn't allowed. So when I started drinking and using other stuff, like, I felt like I had the freedom to say what I wanted to. You know, it happened, like, the progression happened for me really fast. 12, drinking, smoking pot. 13, you know, I tried acid for the first time and ate some mushrooms. It wasn't really hard. My friends and I found a bunch of older, you know, friends' older brothers or older guys in the town, and they would give us whatever we wanted to. So, and there was, you know, at my school, we had the corner, which is where everybody went and smoked their oneies before school or, you know, did whatever they wanted to do. And we had woods behind the school, so we would skip class and go out into the woods and get drunk during the days. You know, by the time I was 14, so I had started, like, flirting with my friend's older brother. And when I was 14, we started dating, right? And he dealt pot. And, there, I had tried, and I'm going to share my substance stories also because I think it's important for younger people. I think that's what gets us here faster. I was out with a friend's friend one night, and she had meth on her, and we tried. I tried it with her, and I loved it. I always felt like drinking I loved. Smoking pot I wasn't super big fan of, and I knew I couldn't do other, like, hallucinogens on a regular basis with, you know, whatever. So my boyfriend, I asked him if he could get it, and he started dealing it. So I had, you know, I got it for free, and I started doing it every day, somewhere in the year when I was 14. I would get up in the morning, and before I even left my bedroom, I would do a couple lines, and all throughout the day I would do them. And then, you know, I worked at a daycare center with all my friends, and we all would do it in the bathroom. And it was, like, I had a good time for a while. There was probably, you know, there was probably a good solid year where it was, like, good, and we all had fun, and, like, nothing happened. But then stuff started hitting the fan. Like, it was weird because every year around Christmas, Halloween, Christmas, and New Year's, somebody in my high school would die in a drunk driving accident. And, the last year and a half of my using, all of the three people that died in the drunk driving accident, I knew they were in my drinking circle. One of them, you know, I felt like I started to get these warnings, because it was like one of them, we were all out at this, like, huge outdoor party, and the guys were jumping off these cliffs, and one of them broke his back, right? So we all had to leave, and then a month later we were at a party and they stole the car and they got in a car accident and he died. I started personally, like, you know, I knew that there was something not right with the way that I was using substances and drinking, because my parents didn't drink. Like, my mom's never been drunk in her life, which is, you know, like, we've looked at some of the genetics because she's adopted, so it makes sense, but, like, I didn't grow up in a household where we had alcohol in the refrigerator, you know. My oldest brother was trouble growing up, but it didn't, like, my home environment wasn't conducive to it, so I don't know why I went off on that tangent. Stuff that started happening for me. Like, I started to feel like I was like, okay, I know I use this every day, and I use it to feel like I'm normal. Because it had gotten to the point where I was like, I needed it to go out of my bedroom in the morning to feel like I was normal like everybody else. Otherwise, I was at the point where I would freak out and cry or yell at somebody. Like, I just couldn't, my emotions were on one end or the other. And my dad really got the brunt of that, because I would wake up in the morning and there he was, and if I didn't have anything, he got it all. And we were super sarcastic to each other, and it took a long time into sobriety for us to even get through conversations without me being really upset. But so things start, like I started to get this feeling like what I was doing wasn't normal. And I had a bunch of things that happened in succession. So I used to babysit for some of the kids at the daycare center, right? And I would do it while I was fucked up. I didn't have a problem with that. But so I was babysitting for this couple and their two little boys one night. And they had me babysit while they were out and back drinking with their friends in their hot tub. And I was sitting on the couch, and their, you know, kids were in front of me in the living room playing, and I could see them out of the back patio door, and I had a thought that either everybody got up in the morning and had a drink or smoked something or took a pill, or there was something really wrong with me that I needed to do that every day to feel normal. You know, and that went in and out, but I didn't forget it. And then my friend died in the car accident. And then I had a seizure. You know, I was up for a few days, and it was hot out. It was summertime, and I forgot to drink stuff, and I had a seizure at my friend's house. You know, and I got up. I had put my parking brake on my car, and when I got up from the seizure, I tried to go drive my car, and I forgot, and I couldn't figure it out. And I had my dad come pick me up, and I woke up like 24 hours later, and I was like, oh shit, how am I going to explain this to my dad that I like tried to drive my car home with a parking brake on, you know? I had a the stuff that kept going on. My gums had started to disappear, so I started getting gum surgery, and they would give me Vicodin at the same time too. So I was taking that. And when I didn't have that, you know, I would drink Robitussin to go to sleep or NyQuil, whatever I could do to, like, keep the up-down balance. I did a lot of the up-down balance. And then I had a friend overdose, and that was about 3 months before I got sober. You know, it's funny because I don't always mention this, but if I wouldn't have gotten sober, I probably would have ended up with my ex-boyfriend in the trailer park with a half a dozen kids. You know, because that's where I was hanging out on a regular basis. And when I first got sober, I was super embarrassed about that because I was like, but, I mean, whatever, it is what it is, but I'm clear that that's where I could have ended up because I had a lot of freedom there to do what I wanted to, but it was also really messed up. But how I got here wasn't really that dramatic. I mean, whatever, it wasn't that crazy. I had planned with my friends to go to this 2-day outdoor concert in Wisconsin, so we all, you know, it started on Friday, and we all had everything by Wednesday night, and then all of the drugs were gone by Friday before we had to leave. You know what I mean? And so when we drove to Wisconsin, and I was trying to sell my jewelry, and I did a lot of things that weekend I said I wasn't going to do. You know, one of the rules that, because I always had all these little rules too. One of the rules was I could never trip on acid by myself, and so I did that. And I slept with some random guy out of the crowd, and I did it to piss off a friend of mine. And by the end of the weekend, I was definitely like fried, but I'd gotten in an argument with a friend of mine, and I decided I was going to drive home to Minnesota, and I didn't have any money left. So I started asking people. We were in a campground, so I started going to ask these people for money in the campground. And, you know, I asked a couple people, and I got no's. And then I asked this guy, and he gave me the most pitiful look. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, you know, there's something really, like I felt like my soul was... ugh, you know. For a while, I'd felt like a shell of a person, and that just kind of hit me. That was my like moment where it shifted, and so I was like, "All right, well, screw it. I'm gonna drive home to Minnesota without any money, and we'll run out of gas if I need to. Whatever." So, I was driving home, started running out of gas, pulled over to the nearest gas station, and called my parents. And I don't know why, but I told them everything that was going on, and they called the insurance, you know, they did all the stuff that my parents are pretty good, so they called the insurance company, got me into the hospital, you know, all the gross stuff of detoxing I went through there, and then I got into an outpatient treatment facility for a year, and a lot of stuff fell into place when I first got sober. The like, let me check time. Okay. The one thing that I think I always mention this, or I try to now, that I think was like really, when I found out, it hit me really hard, is my mom's pretty religious, and so a month before I got sober, I had all these little kits everywhere, right, with a razor, a straw, and a fold of some stuff in it, in my car, in my dresser drawer, in my backpack, just in case one was gone, I had another one. And she, you know, they weren't snoopy, but my mom went into my room to look for something, and she found it, and she didn't say anything. But when I was in treatment later on, she was like, you know, I found that, and I started praying for you, and a month later, you got sober. And I was like, I still today, I'm like, okay, I can get it, you know. My first year, you know, I went into outpatient treatment, and when I was 3 months sober, I went and lived in a sober dorm, which was supposedly the first of its kind, where everybody had to be in a 12-step program. You had to have a sponsor, you had to go to meetings. So I lived in this sober dorm with 25 other people who had less than a year sober. So, and we were all... But you know what? Like, I was 18. We were all... Everybody was under 25, and we had a blast. I don't think... I was planning on going to another school, and I had checked out the treatment center where the school was, and it was just dreadful. But so when I got into the sober dorm, I totally had a good time. And I, you know, we did all sorts of crazy stuff. One of the things for me when I sponsor now is I'm like, I don't really care what you do. Don't drink. Like, we're young. I got sober at 17. There was a lot of stuff I had to learn. And I learned it. I made mistakes. I for sure dated in the first year. I dated my neighbor in my sober dorm. You know, like, and we dated for a couple years. It was a totally good codependent alcoholic relationship. But I learned a ton, and I stayed sober, you know. As far as, I'm like, I want to get into the steps, because I think, you know, that's what keeps us sober. And I, you know, I didn't have any period of time where I didn't work the steps. I got into treatment, and in order to leave the program, we had to have done a fifth step with either a sponsor or the chaplain there. So I got through the first four steps, found a sponsor, and we had to go to meetings too for it. So I started going to AA meetings, and there were quite a few young people's meetings in Minnesota because there's a lot of treatment centers. And everybody goes out to the diner for like 6 hours after the meetings. You know, we all sweep up and clean up cigarette butts. But so I found a sponsor, and we would meet every week and go through the big book. She started bringing me through the big book at the diner, and I'd do my steps. And I did my fifth step with her, did all my steps with her. And, you know, the first time I went through the steps, I didn't think my life was unmanageable when I first got to AA. I knew I was powerless over alcohol and other stuff. But I was like, my life is pretty all right, you know. Ended up in the hospital 2 weeks before I graduated, and I was awake most of the time, so I got most of my homework done. And I had, you know, I had straight A's when I went into treatment, so they were like, well, you don't need to finish anything. But I'm going to guess because I was awake most of the time. But so the unmanageable piece I had to, my sponsor was like, okay, just take a look at your life and kind of sit with that and see where it goes. And when I went on into the rest of the steps, I for sure had a problem with God when I came in. I grew up having to go to church and I didn't like it because I thought the people were super hypocritical. But there was, you know, towards the end of my using, I used to sit in my room at the end of the night and light candles and just kind of sit there because it was cool, and I was like, okay, that's what I started with as my higher power. It's just that feeling I got when I sat in my room with my candles lit. And that it worked. By the time I did my fourth and fifth step, I had been listening to people in AA meetings enough to know that mine wasn't any particular... Like, it wasn't special. I didn't have anything totally crazy on there. So I felt pretty free to share everything with my sponsor. But a couple of things that people told me is they said, write your four-step. Like, you're going to put it in a drawer and never look at it again. Because that way, at least I could get it all out. And, you know, the rest, after I did my first fourth and fifth step, like, I did a couple of amends. And like I did, the first, fourth, and fifth step is what like got me. The one thing for me when I first got sober is I was really sarcastic. To the point where I was mean, like I would just try and cut into people with it. And after I did my first fifth step, that started to ease up. And I noticed it a few weeks afterwards. I was like, huh, that's kind of weird. But okay. So that, you know, and so fast forward. My first two sponsors, you know, after I went through the steps with my first sponsor, I got another one and the first one drank. And then my second sponsor, I started going through the steps with her, and I was like, oh, I think it's time to get a different sponsor. We were becoming too close of friends, and then she drank. And I was like, okay, what's going on, right? Whatever. And I didn't think it was me, but I was like, is my picker wrong? Well, I don't know, you know? Which later on, my second sponsor got sober again, and, you know, like, I know her, we're friends, it's totally cool, but, I think, like, what else do I want to share? You know, a lot of the stuff for me now, so between, I don't know, 3 years and I'm 12 years sober now, a lot of the stuff that I've gone through is, like, emotional sobriety stuff. So I talked about the boyfriend that I had, right? I was 3 years sober when we broke up, and I didn't do any step work after we broke up for a while, for a couple of years. And the one thing I've always done is I've kept going to meetings, and I've almost always had a commitment at my home group. I can say that I can tell you that, you know, I talked to my sponsor's answering machine for a year because I would call when I knew she wasn't going to be there, you know. And some of the stuff for me that started happening is I would get into this, like, I don't even know what you'd call it, but I started getting a little wacky, and like, I don't know if I was depressed or what, but I started seeing things I knew weren't there, like, and it was almost like I was on drugs again, because it was like stuff out of the corner of my eye, whatever it was, and I don't know what it was, but I can tell you, I moved here when I was 6 years sober, and I got a new sponsor, and I said to myself, I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this all over again, I'm going to do it just completely and tell her everything. Because I was afraid to talk to people about some of that stuff. Because I thought, I don't know, they'd put me in the hospital and I didn't want to have to deal with that, etc. My sponsor that I got at that time, I think she saved my, like, she saved my ass. She took me through the steps, again, really thoroughly, and one of the things I didn't do before is I didn't do a 10th step, ever, and so she had me start doing that on a daily basis for a while, and it saved me, and all that crazy stuff that was going on for me went away. I think what was happening, looking back, is like I had so much fear, like there were so many things that I was afraid of that was just like tying me up in a knot. And she, you know, her name was Becca, and she was like, when I first moved here, I got her as a sponsor. 3 months later, she found out she had cancer, and she, like, gave me everything. She didn't, you know, she didn't try and sugarcoat anything. She gave it to me straight and pretty short, and it was what, like, it gave me a lot for my sobriety. And she passed away, but she's somebody who's been really important in my, like, long-term sobriety. Let's see. I think, you know, I'll just talk about kind of the last year or two. Well, whatever, the last couple of years. There's stuff, like, I have some outside issues that I've been dealing with for a while, and they, you know, for a while I wasn't ready to deal with them, but then I was like, you know, I got to a space where things were pretty calm in my life, so I started dealing with them, and in the past couple of years, things have been shifting for me pretty, like quickly and permanently, almost. It was like, it's like I've been getting new perspective shifts, and I started, I got a new sponsor about a year and a half ago, and we started going through the steps kind of crazy, anally, But it's been really cool because each step has taken us a while to get through. And I've started to see stuff in my personal life that's like, oh, it's totally first step stuff. And the first step going through it again this time was painful because I started to get really pissed off at AA. Because I was like, you know, I got here young. I was told all this stuff. And I think part of it has just been growing up. But the one thing is I know AA is always my foundation. And the principles of AA have been fail-safe for me, and I trust that. So it's been interesting kind of going through the steps again with her, and like, I love her, I can say anything to her, and I love AA, which is why it's been such a interesting, like, tumultuous up and down, and really evaluating, like, what do I want my life in AA to look like now? You know, because it's not the same as when I was 17 and got sober. And it probably won't be the same again in 10 years. And if I'm going to be here, you know, which I want to, because I love AA, I get a chance to look and see what that looks like. I'll say the one thing that, the last thing is this last year, like last year I was trying to do all sorts of stuff in my life to like get it controlled and get myself set up so I could do all sorts of stuff, right? And at the end of the year I was like, I'm tired. I'm like tired of doing all this stuff, so I'm just going to take this next year and just not try to force anything, just kind of be with it. And I don't know if they're correlated or not, but like all spring I've been relaxing and kind of enjoying myself, and then all of a sudden I got this job. I've been looking for a new job, but like not super heavily, and I got this job offer that, which is why I'm moving to Florida, that is really great. Like it's more of what I want to be doing, it's good for my career, money's better, and I've been wanting to move out of New York for a while, and it's kind of like, okay, it's the perfect place for me to go. Yeah, I don't know, and my sponsor and I have been talking a lot about, like, you know, by doing all the step work stuff, it really creates a lot of space in my life for things to move fast. Because that's my foundation, and if I'm operating on a foundation that isn't solid, then it all falls to pieces. But we've been slowly going back to put all the bricks in place. So, yeah, that's all I have to share. Thanks.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.